Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where frontline sales leaders teach you how to build and scale an outbound sales team. Welcome back to the Predictable Revenue Podcast. I'm your host, Colin Stewart. Today, I'm joined by Nick Rathjen. He's the Account Development Vice President over at Samsara. And the reason we're having him on the show is he's one of the few guests that has actually hired, I don't know, hundreds of reps. And your goal for this year, Nick, if I have it correct, is hiring over 200 reps.
That is correct. Yeah, we'll finish this year close to 225.
And 20 months ago, you said you had 20 reps. And where are you now?
We're sitting at about 175 on the rep side, including managers, directors. We're just over 190.
Wow. And are these all account development reps? Are these all, or is it a mix?
It's essentially all account development reps, a few specialty roles here and there, but for the most part, account development.
Account development reps, managers, yeah. Directors, and then Nick sitting atop a golden throne.
Something like that. Yeah.
That's awesome. So I like to, when we find guests like this, I like to try and find what's the unique perspective that the guest has. And there aren't too many teams that sort of scale up and have and grow to this many reps. And so what we're going to kind of focus the episode today on is really basically how he's hiring 200 reps in a year without letting the wheels fall off.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, happy to share any insights that are going to be helpful for the audience.
So I think the first question is hiring. How do you even hire that amount of people? Do you you must have an enormous recruiting army?
Yeah, so we've got an incredible recruiting team that's in-house. One thing that we do that's a little different with our recruiting team is they actually sit within sales. I know a lot of companies have recruiting sitting within, HR or people operations. Mm-hmm. So our sales recruiters, they report to our head of global sales. They have quotas that are similar to sales reps. They get paid commission similar to sales reps with accelerators. So we've sort of brought it all in-house, and that's where we do a majority of our hiring. We do leverage some outside agencies. We've got about four agencies in each of the cities where we have offices. So San Jose, San Francisco, Atlanta, and London that will help us out in the event, it looks like we may not be tracking to the hiring goals, just to make sure that we're getting the best talent in-house.
Wow. And so you've got an internal recruiter. Who all is involved on your side? So you've got internal recruiters, a little external recruiters every now and then. And then who else gets involved on the internal side?
Yeah. So we've got recruiters that are more responsible for going, just doing the cold outbound, essentially, to find individuals, typically through LinkedIn. We also have recruiting coordinators, which really own the agency relationship. They help make sure everything's scheduled, that people are filling out their candidate scorecards, so that we're able to turn around our results pretty quickly. After you come on site, you'll typically hear from our recruiting team within 24 to 48 hours. And that's partially out of necessity because we're hiring just over four people a week.
I think I've had one week in my entire life where we hired three people in the same week, and it was just sort of a coming together, and it was total chaos with just so many interviews going on.
My record for most interviews in a day is 11, and about 3 weeks ago I did 11 interviews back-to-back days. So that was a big interview week. But we hit all of our hiring goals, which was exciting. That's really all that matters.
That's really cool. I like how you even have it. You even have your hiring mapped out like a pipeline.
Yeah, I think when you're hiring at scale, there needs to be the process. There needs to be the predictability to ensure that you can hit the hiring targets. And given what we're doing in account development, where we're a support role, as soon as account executives are brought on, we need to make sure that we're ready to support them by delivering the qualified opportunities and the prospects to them that are ready to hopefully engage with us and become the future customer. So you've got to look at it, top of the funnel, mid funnel, what's the output, and Different offices have different ratios, from you know, recruiter phone screens to manager phone screens to on-sites to references to offers to accepts. And just a matter of, you know, just letting the data really tell you, you know, how full you need the top of the funnel to be.
It's really cool. Nick actually was kind enough to put together a nice little spreadsheet for us. I'm going to do some screen sharing here and there, but this is actually your, this is your pipeline here mapped out with, you know, the sort of weekly goals for office. I mean, obviously this is just a snippet, but I like how, so walk me through here. What is the, what does this process look like?
Absolutely. So, you know, for the individuals that can see the screen, essentially we've got weekly goals for different offices. So each of our four offices has, you know, unique hiring targets. Then we've got the funnel mapped out from recruiter phone screen, manager phone screens, on-sites, reference, offers, hired. And what we do is you basically build this out on a quarterly basis. So all 13 weeks will be in there. And we color coordinate the cells. So we're in weeks where we are, you know, 100% or greater relative to the KPI we're trying to hit for that portion of the recruiting funnel. You know, you go green. If it's 80 to 100%, it's yellow. If it's below 80%, it's red. And it's just a great visual tool to really understand, like, are we on pace? I meet weekly with our head of sales recruiting and we'll review this document. And it's basically a weekly pipeline review. Like, how are we doing? Obviously, we'll jump into our candidate management system and see, you know, how, what's the quality of candidates? Are there any areas that, that we're concerned about? And basically, as soon as we start to realize, you know, if there's there are any issues, you know, we pull the trigger on getting some agencies involved. And it's just a great way to ensure that we don't miss hiring targets. So, you know, just like numbers, you can't miss you know, quota, pipeline, revenue targets. We also are firm believers that you can't miss hiring targets internally. So we have a lot of conversations about that for sure.
That's fair. It's a realization that I've learned the hard way a couple of times, unfortunately, where, you know, you've got all these goals to ramp and scale, but if you don't have the right people or enough people to take the meetings or to, you know, earn the meetings, you can't hit your sales goals, no matter how much you think that, oh, this rep, he's awesome. He can, or she's awesome. She can get, you know, 20% more of what she's doing now, who just gave her, you know, this many more meetings. But you kind of come to realize if you're overloading the reps, then the quality of their work actually starts to go down at a certain point.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that that's, you know, there's the quality dynamic that you always have to just like be mindful of. And you know, with missing some of the account development hires, it's one of those items you might not feel it in quarter, but there will be, you know, that tailing effect where, you know, if you there's a broader miss that, you know, you'll feel that a quarter or two later. And we just need to make sure that, you know, when we're in this hyper growth mode, that we're just able to deliver, you know, the pipeline necessary for our sales team to go and execute, do what they do best.
Which is such a key insight. And I imagine at the scale that you're operating, that can have a massive impact on the, on your, whether or not you're hitting your forecast. Are there any other sort of hard fought or hard earned sort of pieces of knowledge like that, that, you know, people might be missing when they're, you know, just hiring, you know, one or two reps at a time?
I think the biggest piece is you can't settle. You really need to make sure that every single person you're bringing in, and it's absolutely the case when you're hiring, you know, at this scale, but even if you're hiring, you know, one rep a quarter, which is, you know, pretty typical, I think, for probably a lot of the people listening today, you've got to nail those. You've got to nail those hires. And to get someone who can just do the job, you basically just hired like a B player, maybe a C player, and just take some more time. Really, you know, be clear on, you know, the types of candidates you're going for. You know, be true to that profile, and then, you know, just don't settle. And you know, we will say internally that if it's not a hell yes, it's a no.
You know, I've heard that so many times. It's awesome hearing that from somebody who hires four people a week, right? Because then we kind of tend to, at least I've tended to, put the onus on somebody else. Hey, this is, you know, the candidate flow isn't good. You know, the pool out there isn't great. But those are total myths and lies that I'm telling myself. If I'm saying, hey, I can't hire because, or I've got to settle for somebody because there's nobody else that's good. And it's not that there's nobody else that's good. It's just that I haven't put the work in to generate that type of funnel.
Absolutely. And, you know, to generate the top of funnel, like we discussed, the internal recruiters, the agencies, we also really emphasize a referral program internally. So every new hire that comes in, they get signed up for about a 15-minute LinkedIn network canvassing session where, you know, it's sort of who else do you know? Obviously, there are incentives in terms of if we hire anyone that they refer. And we'll do big pushes like that. And it's amazing where if you can get, you know, high caliber individuals, they know who from their previous company was top notch. And there's been a lot of cases where, you know, there's been companies that we've kind of come across where, you know, there isn't that promotion path for their account development reps or sales development reps. And, you know, what we do is, you know, we guarantee promotions at the 12-month mark for our account development reps. So everyone that is in tech sales that wants to become an account executive, you know, if they've been an SDR at another company for 15, 18 months, and they're just saying that, you know, they told me I'd be eligible to be promoted, and it's, they're just not seeing that traction. They know that if they come over here, like, you know, I have exactly zero ADRs who have been in seat for 13 months. And that's just, it's part of the hiring mechanism. And, you know, our commercial sales team, they know that they're going to be getting a certain number of account development reps each month, each quarter. So it's, we're all in.
I can't believe you guarantee promotion at the 12-month mark. I mean, I guess it speaks to the scale of the business that you're able to fill that.
Yeah, it wouldn't be possible if we weren't growing at this rate, but it's built into the hiring plan. And we always will allow individual, we look internally for promotions prior to going external, always. So as an example, my three ADR directors, they were all managers on the account development team. When you look across the management team, you know, managers, directors, they're comprised of a lot of individuals that have kind of been samsara, you know, grown. So that increases the pressure for us to nail hires, because not only do we need to bring individuals in that are going to be able to deliver on the opportunity and pipeline goals we have for them. That's our primary focus, clearly, but our secondary focus is we need to deliver the next sales reps. And we've got to be able to do that consistently. And so, you know, it slightly changes who we bring into the business. And so can I kind of talk about like just the composition of the team?
Yeah.
So we've got, when I look at, you know, where we pull folks from, I've got over 30% were previous account executives at other companies, just non-tech. So that may be they were selling advertising, real estate. You know, we've got some people that were coming from food and beverage, people that are involved, given that like a lot of what we sell today is in the telematics and transportation space, that they're account executives at like third-party logistics companies. So they're former reps that are looking for a way to get into tech that maybe weren't a fit for an AE role, but it's like, give us 12 months, let us train you up, let us get you familiar with the product, the market, et cetera. And then let's see what you got when you can get to the AE role. We also have about 30 to 35% of the group are, they're comprised of sales development reps from other companies, typically the companies where there just aren't promotion paths, where they join the company with hopes of becoming an account executive. And unfortunately, there's a difference between a guarantee and we'll consider you. And, yeah. You know, there's no clear sign to a lot of those SDRs that when they start to see folks hired externally, that the consideration might not really be a full-hearted consideration. And then the remaining roughly like 30%, big fan of recruiters, you know, big fan of folks that work in finance. And then we also have some individuals that are coming straight from university. But really everyone is comfortable with picking up the phone, and we are a phone heavy shop.
Cool. Yeah. So you're pulling out of the finance industry as well.
Yeah. Individuals that will be, you know, selling like various financial vehicles, services from some of the, like the larger financial, firms, don't want to name any by names. but again, just individuals that you know, really have displayed that work ethic and tenacity. I mean, that's one of the attributes that we look for. You know, how strong is your hustle muscle? Like, are you ready to really get after it? And that's where, you know, we'll look at some other sales development reps where, you know, they're overly reliant on emails and sort of what we're doing doesn't always fit with that. Like we've got to get in front of our customers because we serve industries that are typically, I mean, they're more like the industries that really fuel like the economy, but like municipalities, transportation companies, food and beverage companies, passenger transit, like those are where we see a lot of our customers today. And you just have to get on the phone with them. You've got to dig into some of these businesses because not all of them have your pristine LinkedIns. So you've really got to go hunt for it.
That's fair. I've done some work into the municipalities and I found they did have great response rates but I imagine if they have great response rates, they also have amazing pickup rates. Cause I think just public perception is, yeah, if you work for the government, you're just kind of sitting there waiting for the phone to ring.
Yeah. I mean, I think different industries and we just deal with such a wide variation of companies. So like one example, I mean, like City of Fort Lauderdale is one of our customers and they've got our gear in on over 1,700 vehicles and we'll sell to them and we'll sell to, you know, a local bakery that has three vehicles up in, you know, Vancouver. And so we really cover that complete gamut and give them a pretty flexible platform that enables them to have just the end-to-end operational visibility that they need to make better business decisions.
Cool. And so pulling people out of finance, pulling people out of, you know, other ADR, SDR roles, and then pulling people out of sort of AE roles that aren't in great companies that want to get into tech.
Yep.
Sweet. And so if you're pulling from a wide gambit of people, I imagine sort of getting them to all drink the Kool-Aid and buy in and get them sort of operating at like all at the same capacity requires quite a bit of onboarding. So can you walk me through what your onboarding looks like?
Yeah, so happy to walk through the onboarding. I think just before we get to that, talking about getting them to drink the Kool-Aid is really important. I think about that in, we'll go with, I guess, the two flavors of Kool-Aid. So the higher level flavor of Kool-Aid, just making sure that they understand like the why of the business. And the whys for us are around safety, around you know, business efficiency, and then just general sustainability. And you know, one of our products is a dual facing AI dash camera, which helps drivers and you know, operations directors of these different transportation companies just be safer on the road, decrease distracted driving, stay off their phone, don't text and drive. You know, if you need to make a quick phone call, respond to an email, like pull over. And so what, you know, our tool can do is it basically will recognize when the driver is taking his eye off the road to look down at you know, his or her device, and it will capture that footage, log it as an incident, get it back to that individual's manager to really treat that as a coaching opportunity. And so we've seen some customers where they've seen as much as a 50% decrease in driving incidences, not necessarily accidents, but just distracted driving, potentially rolling a stop sign, things along those lines. And mm-hmm. So, you know, that really boils down to like, you're saving lives essentially. So you know, who can't get behind that? And then at the other side, from a sustainability standpoint, you know, when we can help fleets have more efficient routes, reduce idle time, reduce carbon emissions, you know, that impacts our climate. And you know, we ran some numbers where basically last year, the amount of fuel savings that we were able to deliver to, you know, our 10,000 plus customers was the equivalent of like planting like 10 million trees. And so you're saving lives, you're planting trees, sort of, so to speak. And then you kind of bring it down to like, well, what are we doing here? And so it's a matter of giving them exposure to sort of how we conduct business. What are the expectations? And ultimately, what is it going to take for you to be a top performer? Because we want everyone to come in and really be looking to get atop the leaderboard. So that's sort of what we do. But to answer your question about onboarding, we basically break it up into like 3 weeks. And the first week is specific to more general onboarding. And we'll do that here in our San Francisco headquarters. So we'll have folks from London, Atlanta, San Jose up here really for the first week. And that you might have an account executive sitting next to an ADR, next to a an SE next to a sales manager. And so kind of if people are following us on YouTube, you can see on this document, you know, we kind of have all those coded in green. And that's, you know, kind of the first week along the top there, you can see, you know, what the 15-day onboarding program looks like. And so it's everything from the company, the customer, you know, our background, products, competitors, tools, et cetera. And then once you get into week two and three, you shift gears. And for us, obviously, it becomes, you know, ADR centric, you know, ADR, SDR, BDR, kind of pick your three-letter acronym. And there we start to get into more tactical trainings around sales skills, prospecting skills, product and market, tools and process, just to make sure that, you know, really everyone has the appropriate foundation to be successful. And we really try to make sure that you know, the reps, when they're out in San Francisco for that first week, get exposure to everyone. You know, week two and three, everyone's back in their main hub. And they're doing a lot of these trainings remotely, but we'll have some trainings run out of Atlanta. So for San Jose, it's remote, but for Atlanta, it's in person. And then we mix it up just to kind of create you know, some parity in the experience. But after you're doing that, then we're trying to get them on the phones as quickly as possible. All of the account development reps are on the phone within the first week, typically, you know, day three or day four. Just to really get them comfortable having some of these conversations and really sort of being comfortable being uncomfortable. And one of a great quote that was shared by my head of sales enablement is that there's no comfort in the growth zone and there's no growth in the comfort zone. So how can you start to push the bounds of, you know, what you are comfortable doing and really have that become a habit where you should be a little uncomfortable every day? And if, you know, you're completely comfortable and you've been that way for a number of weeks, you're probably not really challenging yourself. So, you know, let's talk with peers, talk with managers, let's get you some stretch goals, let's work on some sales skills and really invest in that individual to have them continue to up-level their game. Does that sort of answer your question, Colin?
For sure. For sure. And so you're actually ramping reps to productivity in a month?
Yeah. Yeah. In short, that it definitely, and this is something, you know, when you talk to sales development communities, you know, a lot of, you know, bigger cities will have some type of community. It's different based on what product you're selling and what market you're catering to. And the fact that our product is relatively straightforward, you know, talking specifically about like our fleet side of the business. Yep. It's dash cameras, it's GPS that help with routing, dispatch, maintenance alerts, and then we have asset tracking solutions. So that might help, you know, track forklifts, trailers, dumpsters. I mean, it all makes a lot of sense. You know, we're not talking about really complex pieces of IT that you may need to spend 3 months making sure that you can really talk the talk given who you need to go sell to. So that absolutely impacts how quickly we can get people up and going. And so it's, you know, high caliber candidates in hires. It's a straightforward product that, you know, we love head to head competition. I mean, we're a newer company. We've been around for, you know, just over 4 years. And when you kind of do a bake off between what we've got in competitors, which, you know, we've got some great competitors out there. We just really like our odds. And that also helps. So we have a lot of wind at our back when we're going to market. And again, these industries have not really been as served as they could be by technology companies. And so, you know, we're in a good spot.
So if I'm a new rep coming into your organization, I'm on the phone by day three, day 15, beginning of week four, I'm out of the onboarding altogether. What happens then?
Then it's just a matter of, you know, kind of really getting your day-to-day squared away. I mean, we've got recommendations about time management. I think that, you know, time management is critical to individual successes. It's the one resource I think that, you know, no one ever feels like they really have enough of. You know, so how, you know, the amount of time you've got, how do we maximize it? And so we put a lot of emphasis into a repeatable process. And so for our outbound reps, for example, we have a series of Salesforce reports that they work in sequential order kind of on a daily basis, that, you know, will be their follow-ups. Another report will be everything that we've got from an event standpoint. You know, we've got an incredible event marketing team that, you know, in some cases they're at two or three events and trade shows a week. So you get those into the reps' hands. You know, we'll do other internal campaigns that may be industry, product focused. We'll do some other campaigns where, you know, we'll get creative internally, see how they work. Another report where it's, you know, how are individuals interacting with emails? And then lastly, kind of like your colder accounts. Mm-hmm. And so it's, you know, you get into that rhythm where, you know, if we can surface and do a good job from a management level and in partnering with like our growth marketing team or our events marketing team, you will get our reps leads that convert above kind of our outbound benchmark, which is about, you know, like 3.5% in terms of, you know, prospects to qualified opportunities. And so we really, you know, how are we doing against that, you know, 3.5%? And so we can find some campaigns that will do 5%, 8%, 10%, you know, fantastic. And we just make sure that reps understand what do you need to be saying during those conversations and just letting it rip. And so it's a somewhat structured process, but, you know, we don't want the reps to be overly robotic. You know, we've hired good people. We've got a good product to sell. We've trained them the way that we want to train them. And then it's just give them a process that, you know, just become familiar with it. And like everything, you get better with time. But, you know, everyone's very collaborative on the floor. You know, it's a competitive group, but I'd say equally collaborative, where, you know, so many people are newer that, you know, tips and tricks are, you know, widely shared and disseminated. So people, you know, ramp pretty quickly. And we also will have a lot of our top performing reps, you know, they'll run trainings. You know, how, you know, you look at someone who's just crushing it in month 9, month 10, get them in front of the folks in, you know, their first and second month. And how do you shorten that learning curve? And, you know, we measure that just based on number of opportunities generated on a per day basis.
Well, and so you said something interesting, 3.5% conversion rate from cold to opportunity generated. So is that meeting booked with a AE?
Yeah. So the way that we just use Bant, and basically we've got a few filters in there. So given that we're scaling, I mean, you kind of called this out at the beginning of the podcast, 20 months ago, we had under 20 reps. I now have, you know, almost as many managers and directors as I had reps when I started. Our sales counterparts, they've undergone similar scale. So your Bant and whatever, you know, your preferred qualification methodology is, it's just a filter system, essentially. Like, how do you take, and every company needs to make their own call. Like, if you're not really growing, tighten that filter up. That makes sense. I would absolutely get on board with that. But when we're bringing on the number of heads that we're doing, you know, we just look at, you know, authority and need, and we've got, you know, are they a decision maker, an economic buyer, and an influencer, and an influencer being basically like one degree of separation from a decision maker. And then need, you know, do they have something impacting their business? Are they coming up on a contract end date? Are they looking to consolidate? We've got a few, you know, bullets that really fit that criteria. So if that criteria is met, our account development team will then get those, get that account transferred over to an account executive to run a discovery call and or demo. And the account executive needs to verify the authority and need in Bant and then go get either budget or timing. And there's some variation with, you know, the B&T based on segment. And so, and then if it fits 3 out of 4, you know, we figure we can get that into pipeline.
Right on. And so your account development reps, their goal is authority and need. So right person, and there's something wrong in their life that justifies having a conversation with a rep, and then that's a good meeting?
Yeah, essentially. And we'll see, you know, we've got acceptance kind of like, I guess, spectrums that we look for, just where we can sort of recognize, you know, if the acceptance rate is too low, you know, are we just saying, I mean, typically a pretty clear sign that, you know, it's not fully qualified. Some of those shouldn't be sent over. Or if the acceptance rate is too high, you know, you've got to take a couple of shots that you're not you're not taking right now. And so, you know, inbound, you know, we want to be, you know, kind of 80-85%, outbound kind of 70-75% works. And then you get into enterprise that can come off that 70%, like even 50% works.
Gotcha. And how tightly, like, how hard are you disqualifying on time? Like if I'm an ADR and I book them, it's the right person. There's a need, but it's not this year. There's a need next year. Is that staying with me, or does that go to the AE and then the AE is responsible for working it?
In that case, so we have three distinct sales segments, from commercial, which is essentially like our small business, mid-market, and enterprise. And so timing varies with each of those groups. You know, when you're looking at the commercial space, it's more of a transactional space where, you know, they don't need 12 months to buy because they may only have 15 vehicles, and you know, that you should be able to act on that definitely like within the month. And so we've got time parameters there. Mid-market, you know, we might go 4 quarters out, enterprise 6 quarters out. It's just, you know, what's the average? The question is ultimately like, what's the average sales cycle? Yeah. And how long are we comfortable with letting a qualified opportunity in a solid prospective account sit before, you know, we know we have to get into that negotiation.
So on your mid-market team, you said what's the average sales cycle look like? So not the enterprise guys, but what is the...
We're just over 3 months.
Over 3 months. And so you said you'd let, basically, if there was something within the next 4 quarters, if there's an opportunity in the next 4 quarters, then you'd let that sit with AE in their pipeline?
Correct.
So sort of like a kind of a 4X, and then maybe a little bit more on the enterprise side, because I imagine the sales cycles are a bit longer.
Yeah. I mean, in the enterprise side, I mean, you'll see some deals that are really outliers that may just be a couple of months, but a lot of the sales cycles you're talking about, you know, typically north of 12 months. And you just, when you think about who falls into that enterprise space, the platform that we offer is so integrated into their day-to-day that to pull that out, it's painful. And so you know, it's worth it in the long run, but it's ultimately like, it's not a simple process. And there's some technology that's sold that a rip and replace is something that you can do in an afternoon. In other aspects of the business, like it's going to take a lot of heavy lifting. You're likely have deals that are rolled out in phases across different arms of the business, just to make sure that things go smoothly.
Cool. Yeah, I'm asking personally just because I've been having a conversation with our sales team about how long to keep an opportunity on the AE side, sort of without, you know, before you pass it back. And my theory with an SDR, whether they're inbound or outbound, is if they're just like you, if they're the right person and there's some sort of pain, right, and there's enough pain, send them across. And then it's the sales rep's job to qualify for, okay, is there budget? Is there timeline? Right? Because that's the whole sales process. If you gave them Bant, that's like the sales job is done. You're not a salesperson. You're an order taker.
Yeah.
But if you've got, you know, authority and need, then if there's, say you have a first conversation, it doesn't go anywhere and the rep doesn't follow up, like the AE doesn't follow up with that account, how long do you let that sit before it cycles back and somebody else can grab it?
Yeah, and so that ultimately is going to be a judgment that needs to be made by that account executive, their sales manager, and just our leadership more broadly. As soon as an account has been, you know, quote unquote worked, let's say in that example, you know, a few meetings took place and the opportunity has, you know, they move it to close lost. We'll typically let that sit for, you know, at least 4 months before potentially re-engaging. And obviously, like, the more time, the better. But one kind of unique element of what we have going on at Samsara is, you know, how quickly we're adopting new products and making improvements to our current line, that if you let it sit for more than a quarter, like, we have something new to talk about.
Yeah.
And so it's a matter of almost putting some of these accounts on, I'm a very visual person, like on a carousel, let it sit. It'll come back around and, you know, understand where things were left off. But also be clear that, you know, we're not a one product company. You know, we have a suite of products, you know, that sort of fall under the telematics umbrella, like I called out the asset tracking, GPS and dash cameras. We also have like an industrial set of products that's an emerging part of our business. And so there's a lot that we can talk to these accounts about. And so it's just a matter of, you know, sometimes you get into an account through the front door, it might be a side window, maybe a chimney, you know, work different angles, work different lines of the business. You know, one of my favorite sales quotes is, you know, a single point of contact is a single point of failure. Hmm. And like our product, it just touches different arms of the business, where you can have a conversation in safety, you can have it in operations, you can have it in transportation, you can have it at the executive level. So there's a lot of people that you really need to take our message to.
Right on. And just last question, and I'm sorry, everybody, I'm distracting for my own personal reasons. The re-engaging that account after it's been closed, losted, is that back to the account development team or is that on the AE team?
It can go to either. I mean, basically, we've got just a broad Salesforce account pool.
Yeah.
We've got, you know, a cool down period. And, you know, as we're bringing in new people, we obviously have to give them accounts to work. And yeah. So those accounts could end up with either account executives or account development representatives.
Gotcha. So they'll basically be reassigned, and you're always doing sort of a load balancing to make sure your AEs have a certain number of accounts that they're working. And then your ADRs are also have a certain number of accounts they're working.
Absolutely.
Cool. Okay. I'll stop distracting. And it's just, you know, I like to think in systems, and it's interesting to get a chance to see how the different systems at a larger organization works. And so I just, yeah, my brain sort of takes over. It's like, screw the questions that we planned out ahead of time. Like, I just had to ask those questions or I would have started steaming at the ears.
Yeah.
So we were talking about onboarding. Mm-hmm. I did want to ask what your playbook looked like. You know, we kind of talked about, like, obviously you've got to have a lot of things documented. It's not just like, all right, here's your Salesforce, here's your, you know, engagement tool, here's your phone number, here's your desk, go.
Right. Yeah, so we obviously have a variety of email sequences based on industries, personas, products that we've given to the account development reps. We just released a new playbook this Monday, and it was more so for calls. And I think playbook is also one of those terms, like different sales leaders.
Everything.
You know, is it everything, or is it, you know, more specific? In this case, just talking about more of a talk track. Definitely, like, I'm anti-script and pro. Talk track that ends up almost being more like thought track than talk track, where you want to help individuals navigate conversations. So, you know, what's the opening line? What's the icebreaker? How do you explain why you're calling and you know, gain relevancy and credibility quickly? How do you deliver, you know, value props based on industry, based on persona? Get into, you know, common objection handling, how you can, you know, display a level of like empathy when you're dealing with those objections, categorize as an objection or is it a brush off, get into case studies to really provide like that social proof. And then, you know, how do you close it out? And it's, you know, just best practices that like a playbook. And you know, I know you know, in listening to your podcast, know that you have been involved in hockey and coach hockey, where there's like a set play where you don't just draw it up on a whiteboard. You know, it's a matter of it needs to be run time and again, where you really develop that muscle memory and there, where you can inject that level of comfort where people don't need to think about what they're going to say next. And they're really present. They're in the moment and they're able to, you know, be active listeners and react the way that really you need to be a good salesperson. And to be effective in sales, the people outside of sales have a misconception where they view sales individuals as, you know, smooth talking, kind of twist your arm into purchasing something that you don't really need. And to be an effective modern sales professional, it's a matter of, you know, the information you can collect versus the information you can convey. And if you're going to get up there and feature dump or talk circles around someone that maybe they're not the right person, or maybe they're just not interested, you're wasting time. Like, you need to understand them, their business, their role, their challenges. And by absorbing that information, understanding that information, your message becomes that much more potent, where you can now go and talk to someone where it's not, I'm talking to someone who is an operations director at a transportation company. No, I'm talking with Colin, who, you know, runs, you know, Stewart Trucking in, you know, Vancouver, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, then it's a different conversation. And now you've gotten away from almost, you know, that fear that sometimes comes in with cold calling, mm-hmm. where now you're just talking with another person and you know a little bit about them. And again, provide structure, but give reps a certain degree of autonomy where, you know, we can leverage them for the skills that they possess, which is why we hired them in the first place.
You know, it's really funny as you were explaining this, I was thinking back and I'm like, this really reminds me of something. And I was thinking it reminded me first of sort of flow, like the book by Mahali Csikszentmihalyi. Mm-hmm. I'm sure I'm saying that incorrectly, but I've heard multiple people say it different ways and I can't decide. But it was actually, it had nothing to do with any of the books on business or anything like that. I've actually been I've been taking a course on guitar. I played guitar for a very long time and I never actually learned properly how to solo. I can mimic other people's solos, but I can't write my own. And the instructor was talking the other day about how you can't be conscious and consciously thinking about the notes. You can't be consciously thinking about the scale and what, you know, where you are here, where you are there. You have to get to this unconscious level of being good, of knowing all these things so that you can just sort of sit back into that flow state and just kind of let your brain take over and we're not thinking about it. And I thought there's so many parallels to sort of the sales game. You need to know all these talk tracks, but you can't be sitting there looking at the script on your screen being like, okay, wait till I hear a keyword, then I'm going to throw the script at him, right? Because that's not really interacting. That's just sort of sitting and waiting and asking, you know, questions like you're reading off a checklist. You've got to actually engage in the conversation. And it's sort of like, you know, you're making music together in that you're kind of playing off of each other and there's a give and there's a take and you're asking questions and you're trying to learn and it's got to sound, it's got to be natural. It's got to be, you know, people have to trust you and they got to enjoy the conversation for it to sort of progress a little bit further. But I just thought interesting parallel that I thought I'd distract the podcast with for a little bit there.
Perfect. Yeah. It's that like organic fluidity almost mm-hmm. where it's, it becomes second nature. You don't have to think about it. Just get in your rhythm, get in your flow. And, you know, do what you know you can do, you know, have that confidence that, you know, what you're providing is valuable, you know, information, the solution we can potentially provide and, you know, and just have fun with it. You know, that's one of the items, like you can't not have fun, you know, smile, enjoy it. And that kind of comes to like floor culture and just environment, which is also critical.
For sure. And when you get to those stages, like that unconscious competence, right? Like celebrate them, right? You're sort of, there's so many little wins along the way. I imagine you guys have a ton of little wins along the way. Like talk to me about can you talk about some of the ones that you guys celebrate?
Absolutely. So obviously little wins lead to big wins and you can't only be chasing those big wins. And so examples of like how we'll celebrate those little wins on the floor is, you know, even some of the conversations that don't have potentially the outcome that you're looking for, or maybe you're coming across a prospect that isn't having the best day, and you hear one of your pod mates kind of have one of those calls, and everyone can hear it, right? And it's a matter of, you know, celebrating that, you know, the individual kept their cool, the individual handled the objections well. And so it's really like the small tactics and techniques that they use. Another way that we, you know, one office specifically, when I go down to San Jose about once a week, everyone has bells on their desk on the entire ADR floor. We've got about 25 heads down there. And it's the bells that you'd see on the front desk of a hotel. And so when someone gets an opportunity, an email goes out to the entire account development organization. And as soon as they see one of the people's names in San Jose pop, everyone starts to ring the bell and they start, you know, cheering for Colin, you know, well done, Colin.
That's so awesome.
And it's, you know, everyone's very supportive, but it's, then kind of like the psychological effect is like, other people are like, well, I want people to ring the bell for me. And, you know, the person next to me, you know, just earned an opportunity. I want one today. Like, today is my day. This is the afternoon. And so you just kind of, people feed off that energy. I mean, similar to what you were just talking about music. And I think like really like jazz is, I think, the genre where there is the like feeding off one another. And when you see like really proficient jazz players, like, there's an energy, and people will throw things back and forth from the pianist to the bassist to the person on trumpet, et cetera. And you kind of get that going back and forth. And then there's also like the fun, you know, just kind of like jawing on the floor, you know, where if someone gets, you know, two in a row and their buddy is looking to get their first, you know, how do you have some fun with that? And you know, but really everyone's celebrating each other and, you know, just making sure that the environment is where you need it to be is critical. And like another way that we really measure that, kind of taking it out of like the, you know, per office, per team view, is we do a quarterly employee survey where we want to hear what we're doing well, and it's anonymous. And we actually, we just released it this week. It's like, what can we be doing better? And, you know, that's, you get reps coming up with ideas that then we'll talk about as a management team. We'll sort of look for themes, trends, how are we doing? What do we need to address? And after you aggregate all that data, we come back to the entire organization. We go, these were like the 3 to 5 high level themes. And here are 3 to 5 actions we're going to be taking based on your feedback. Thanks for letting us know how we can best serve you in sort of that like servant leadership mindset. And like an example of like, they wanted a peer recognition Slack channel. So that if the manager's maybe not on the floor, maybe they're in a one-on-one, that if a teammate sees someone else do something exciting, they'll throw it in the Slack channel, and then you'll get, you know, all sorts of Slack activity where, you know, you'll just at here and everyone will jump in and just go, do you know what? Colin just got, you know, a deal Colin sourced 6 months ago just turned into a deal that was like this big, yeah, this revenue amount. And then everyone will, you know, kind of give the person who is deserving of props the props.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I love the idea of the Slack channel. I something you mentioned kind of earlier about when you were talking about the bells was it wasn't just celebrating the wins or when you're booking a meeting or when a meeting turns into an op. I think you had mentioned, you know, dealing with a hard customer, and you know, the customer on the other end might've been a jerk and the rep handled it really well. Like, it sounds like you're celebrating resilience there. It's like, hey, this is, you were like super gritty there. Nice work. Good hustle. It's not just about like, hey, everything is roses and it all turned, you know, beautiful. It's like, hey, this was a shitty call and you did a great job.
It's just an acknowledgement of a peer essentially. And it's just like, that's the symbol, that's the sound. And what's cool about that in the San Jose office is, you know, because we've got like 25 heads there, you can hear that throughout the floor. So on like where the mid-market account executives sit, like you can hear when the bell's going off. You can hear it when you're in the kitchen. And it's also just a good way for the rest of the business to hear that, you know, we're over here, we're hustling, we're trying to do right by the business. We're trying to find, you know, our next customers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's fun, you know, because we'll get, you know, recognition from other lines of business internally.
It sounds like a really great way to keep people hopped up on the company culture Kool-Aid, if I could work.
Absolutely. I mean, you can't, when you're scaling, it's culture is one of those items. It can never take a back seat. And culture is so important to us. And it's one of those items. I think about culture. Culture at a company will change with each additional hire you make. So you have to be clear on like who you want to bring into the business. What characteristics and attributes do they have to possess? And it's almost like a drop of creamer into a cup of black coffee. Every new hire that you bring on, they change the culture a little bit. And, you know, hopefully, I mean, typically for the positive. And then it's a matter of just making sure that everyone understands, like, what do we stand for? How do we need to operate? How do we need to, like, hold ourselves? You know, what's the reputation internally that we need to you know, maintain, and every day is a chance to continue to reinforce that culture.
Right on. And so we had talked when we did our pre-interview about mentors. What roles do mentors play? What role do mentors play in sort of helping maintain that culture?
I would say a critical role. Mentors, the way that it is set up today, so we'll have individuals trained up in our HQ here in San Francisco. So really there's a mentor for like the first week, where it's someone else who works in the same role segment, will meet that individual for kind of like their first lunch on day one. Mm-hmm. Also, you know, best practice that we're encouraging is even for some of our mentors to be, you know, we connect our mentors with the new hires prior to the new hire's first day. Mm-hmm. And so even trying to get that mentor to meet that individual in front of the office and, you know, go grab a cup of coffee. And, you know, I've got two kids. It's sort of like that first day of school where, you know, when you've gone from elementary school to junior high or junior high to high school to college, you know, maybe you've had to change schools in the middle. That first day when you walk on campus, it's not always the easiest day, but it's like, how can you be met by someone who, you know, they understand the role, they'll be able to kind of show you around the office, show you the ropes, help you get set up for success, and be your like point of contact. So we'll have the mentors sort of work with them throughout the first week, but it's not only the mentor's responsibility to up level the reps. Like it always is a team effort. And we want everyone within our organization, you know, definitely the account development team, but I know this is the case across our entire business. Everyone needs to operate as a leader. And it's not, you know, it's the difference between like a leader and a manager. It's not just, hey, this is how you do it. Like, that's not really what a mentor is. That's an aspect of what we need to cover, but there's also, you know, it's in addition to the process, it's the behavior, it's the attitude, it's the, you know, office presence. How do you hold yourself? What's your level of professionalism, acumen, et cetera? And that's really what we try to instill. And then after the first week, after they get out of our HQ, they go into their permanent offices, and then they'll be connected with another individual that can really help them. And, you know, that may be the team lead. It could just be other people that are just kicking butt on the floor that can just help introduce them to the behaviors that they need to see.
That's really cool, man. I like how we've got kind of three definitive sort of pieces. It's the hiring, it's the onboarding, and then the sort of maintaining of the culture. And it's the experience of having done all of these things at scale that really makes all this, you know, super interesting to me. I'm curious, like, these are a bunch of things that went right. What are some things that took longer than you expected?
Yeah. So, you always want things to go right, and it's nice to come on a podcast and talk about how everything went smooth. I think the reality is there's challenges within every company, every organization that you can't expect to not come across challenges. Those are a given, right? But it's almost like, what's your attitude in the actions you take when you identify a challenge? So how can you diagnose it? How can you get to the root cause? Who are the other stakeholders you need to get involved in, like, finding a resolution and in embracing the challenge, because it's an opportunity to get better. Specific to your question and what took longer, an item that was a challenge that just comes to mind is for our London office, finding individuals that not only fit our ideal candidate profile, but also have the appropriate language proficiencies. Right now in Europe, we're in the UK, we're in France, we're in the DACH region, the Benelux region, Spain. We're going to be getting into several more European markets within the next couple of quarters, and finding someone who can speak Dutch, who loves to outbound, who is a hunter, who fits our profile. That took a little bit longer than we would have liked, but it's, again, you can't sacrifice, back to what we were talking about earlier, you can't sacrifice quality to fill ahead. And as much as you just can't miss numbers, you can't hire the wrong people. Like, you know, it feels good to go, we hit our hiring goal, we're set. If you don't have the right people on board, it's, you know, that's one of those items that lingers. And, you know, that's the case throughout the entire organization.
So when you were faced with the adversity of trying to hire, of not being able to hire Dutch speaking ADRs in London, how did you guys handle that?
So I think just get the appropriate people to the table. Our recruiting team in the UK, recruiting leadership here in San Francisco, account development, you know, leadership, myself and my director out there. Talk about, you know, where have we been looking for these candidates? Where have we yet to look for these candidates? And at that point, you know, it's an opportunity to potentially bring in, you know, agencies as necessary to help us find, you know, the right people. And especially early on when you're talking about the first, you know, one or two heads you're putting in a new market, those heads are even more critical than, you know, maybe the 19th or 20th head. Because you already have the framework, you've got the process, you've got the culture established. The first few hires, they're going to be the ones that establish that culture, reinforce that culture, and are going to be the ones that are training their peers when they come on board. So you got to make sure you get it right. And fortunately, we've been able to hire a Dutch-speaking team and a Dutch-speaking manager. And so we're in a good spot now, but it definitely was a more laborious hire than where we've hired in other markets and for other roles.
That's totally fair. The it sounds like I like the way you guys kind of rallied the team. You stuck to your principles, because at the beginning of any team, one bad hire is 100% of the team, right? You've got two hires and one is bad and one is great. That's 50% of the team is shit, right? But when you're, you know, it's your 19th or your 20th, it's 5% of the team. It has less of an impact. And that culture can just, you can create such a tremendous momentum in the wrong direction by hiring those first people early. So like props to you for sticking to it.
Yeah, no. And again, I mean, you nailed it. It's culture, and it's how do you maintain that? How do you make sure you monitor it? How do you make sure that, you know, you really like fan the flames of a culture? Because I as the leader of this group, like, I don't get to set the culture. I mean, the culture at this point, it's embodied by every single individual we have. I mean, they have a good time. I'm looking forward to getting some of those employee survey scores in hoping that we can have, continue just like the really strong performance that we've seen there for the account development group.
Right on, Nick. I feel like I've taken so much of your time, and I know we've got about 9 minutes left here. So I did want to wrap with, I'll give you the chance to sort of promote. We might skip the lightning round, but give you a chance to promote Samsara. But before I do, I want to know, just kind of finish the interview with, what are you most proud of from your time here at Samsara?
The item that I'm most proud of in my time at Samsara is just the team that we've built. And, you know, everyone within this organization, you know, I've interviewed, we've brought in, you know, an incredible collective of account development reps. I'm incredibly proud of our management team. I think the managers are really the ones that, you know, they're in the trenches, they're in the day-to-day, they're coaching and developing these reps. We've got incredible managers. All three of the directors were managers at one point and have made the jump to, you know, now managing managers. David Shea, Michal, they've done an incredible job. So really proud of them. And just really, you know, how we've set ourselves up as an organization to continue to, you know, deliver, you know, high impact to the business, you know, both in the pipeline and in prospective customers, as well as, you know, the future AEs. And so I'm really proud of that. And, you know, the culture, you know, kind of back to those scores, you know, we measure those scores negative 100 to 100, and three out of the last four quarters we've scored in the 80s. And, you know, typically when you see like that range, you know, 30 is good, 50 is great. And to be in the 80s for three quarters out of the last four is something I'm incredibly proud of, a streak I'm hoping that we'll be able to continue. And, you know, we're typically the highest scoring group that has more than 10 heads in any team or group. So really proud of that.
Wow, Nick, that's really awesome. And especially to have not only just built the team so quickly, but also to maintain such a positive outlook on the team, or a positive outlook coming from the team, where it'd be so easy to just make the excuse of, well, we're moving so fast, everything's broken because we're moving so fast, right? It would be so easy to just become an excuse factory in that case. But it sounds like you guys have, you've all really stepped up built the systems. You've got a really finely tuned machine. It sounds like things are working really well over there. Although I'm sure it's all, you know, organized chaos when you're hiring that many people, but it sounds like you guys have it pretty nailed.
Yeah, there's no shortage of action, and there's always things that, you know, even, you know, where you feel like things are going well, you can always be doing it better. And, you know, there might not be those 10% gains, but where those 5% gains, the 2% gains, and just, you know, continue to refine the process. And, you know, the new hires always will test it, and the data will not lie.
Totally. So I do want to be mindful of your time, because I know you probably have another meeting backing up to the top of the hour here. So if anybody heard this and was like, damn, I want to come work for Nick, or I want his advice, or I want to work for Nick because this sounds like an amazing organization, what's the best way they can get in touch with you?
So the best way to get in touch with me is just reach out to me on LinkedIn. Fortunately, there are not very many Nick Rathjens out there. So last name is Rathjen. Feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn. Obviously, always happy to jump on a phone call, talk with some people, kick some ideas around. And if you're interested in joining Samsara, obviously go to Samsara's website and our career page. There's a ton of roles, not only within the ADR organization, but across product, engineering, sales, you name it, we're hiring for it. And it's just a fantastic company with incredible leadership. Our CEO was named Glassdoor CEO of the Year last year. LinkedIn listed us as a top startup. And, our founders, this is their second unicorn. So they know what they're doing. And anyone that's interested in, you know, becoming part of something that's really exciting would love to talk with them.
Right on. And what markets are you hiring in right now?
All markets: San Francisco, San Jose, Atlanta, and London.
Right on.
Yeah.
Cool, Nick. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. I feel like I learned a ton. This was great.
Thank you very much for having me. Just continued success. Keep doing what you're doing. And just appreciate the invite.
Right on, man. Thanks again. And see you all next week.